Have you ever thought about what happens when law enforcement, labels someone in the media and it sticks, even if it's not totally accurate?
Yeah, it's a pretty scary thought. Like, imagine being plastered all over the news as a fugitive who's armed and dangerous.
Right. It's a situation that actually happened to a guy named Mark Hale. It's the focus of a really interesting case from Montana back in 1999, Hale v. City of Billings Police Department.
Oh, I think I remember hearing about that one. Does it involve, like, a misdemeanor warrant and a most wanted list or something?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Hale had this misdemeanor warrant out for him for, like, 10 months.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden, he ends up on this show called Yellowstone County's Most Wanted with, like you said, the fugitive and armed and dangerous labels attached to his name. It really raises some big questions about where the legal boundaries are when the police talk about someone publicly.
For sure. Like, how much leeway do they really have? And where does that leeway end? It's a super important issue.
Totally. And that's exactly what we're going to be diving into today. We're going to unpack the legal nitty-gritty, looking at defamation, negligence, and just how much freedom law enforcement has in shaping the public narrative about someone, especially when it comes to criminal allegations.
And I think what makes this case even more fascinating is that the trial court initially sided with the police, and the TV station.
Mm-hmm.
They granted them summary judgment, which basically means they thought the case was so clear-cut that it didn't even need to go to a full trial.
Right, right. But then the Montana Supreme Court stepped in and said, hold on a second.
Yeah.
They reversed that decision, which is, always super interesting. So the question becomes, what did the higher court see that the trial court missed? What made them think this case needed further examination?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what were those key differences in perspective?
Let's jump into the defamation claims first. The trial court seemed to think that the terms fugitive, most wanted, and armed and dangerous were, quote, essentially truthful. What was the Supreme Court's take on that?
Well, the Montana Supreme Court looked at that and said, not quite. They went back to the basics of defamation law in Montana. You need a few things for a defamation claim to stick. You need a false statement. You need that statement to be published to someone else, what we call unprivileged publication. And then you need to show that the statement caused harm to the person's reputation.
Okay, so, pretty standard defamation stuff. But how did the court apply those elements to Hale's situation?
Well, they took each of those terms, fugitive, most wanted, armed, and dangerous, and they looked at them closely. They said, okay, were these actually false in Hale's case? And this is where the details matter, right? Like, yeah, he had a warrant out for his arrest, but the court pointed out that it seemed like the police actually knew where he was. He wasn't actively hiding, trying to evade arrest like we typically think of when we hear the word fugitive.
So the court was basically saying that just because someone has a warrant doesn't automatically make them a fugitive.
Yeah.
In the truest sense of the word.
Exactly. The court also highlighted that the police themselves had admitted they were hesitant to serve the warrant on Hale at his businesses because they didn't want to embarrass him. So they knew where he was, and they weren't super concerned about him being a flight risk.
That's interesting. They kind of contradicted their own fugitive label, didn't they?
Right. And the court really honed in on that. They said, unless the evidence showing that those labels were true is, like, overwhelmingly obvious, it's up to a jury to decide whether they were actually false or not, considering all the specific facts of the case. It comes down to whether a reasonable person would think those labels were accurate in that particular situation.
Okay, so the court wasn't convinced that those labels were accurate just based on the warrant alone. Now, what about the police's argument that they had the right, the legal privilege to make those statements about Hale? How did the court handle that?
This part is really important. It gets to the heart of the power dynamics between law enforcement and individuals. So the police said, look, we had the privilege to say those things because it was part of our official duty. But the Montana Supreme Court wasn't having it. They rejected the idea that police have absolute privilege in this kind of situation.
So they're saying that police statements made outside of, like, formal legal proceedings don't get automatic protection just because an officer is speaking.
Exactly. They drew a distinction between statements made in, like, a courtroom or an official report and statements made on a public TV show. The court said that appearing on a show like Yellowstone County's Most Wanted doesn't give police blanket immunity from being held accountable for what they say.
That seems like a crucial point.
Yeah.
I mean, imagine if police could just say anything about someone publicly without any consequences, even if it's not true.
Right. That would be pretty alarming. The court did acknowledge that the police might have what's called a conditional privilege in these kinds of situations, but that's not a free pass.
Okay, so what exactly does conditional privilege mean? How does that play into all of this?
A conditional privilege basically means that the protection only applies if the privilege isn't being misused or abused. So a jury would have to look at all the circumstances and decide whether the police were acting reasonably when they labeled Hale the way they did.
So what kinds of things would a jury consider when deciding if the police abused that privilege?
Well, they ask questions like, did the police have a legitimate reason to use those specific labels? Did they act with malice, meaning they intended to harm Hale? Or did they just recklessly disregard the truth? These are important factors in determining whether the police lost that conditional privilege.
I see. So it's a much higher bar than just saying, well, I'm a police officer, so I can say whatever I want.
Absolutely. And that distinction is really important. The court is essentially balancing the need for law enforcement to inform the public with the individual's right to protect their reputation from potentially false and damaging statements.
That makes sense. It's all about striking a balance between public safety and individual rights. Now, let's move on to the negligence claim in this case. Initially, the trial court said that the police didn't owe Hale any kind of duty of care when it came to how they portrayed him to the media. Why did the Supreme Court disagree with that finding?
Yeah, the negligence part of this case is super interesting, too. Remember, to win a negligence claim, you generally have to prove four things: duty, breach, causation, and damages. So the trial court focused on that first element, duty, and said the police didn't have a responsibility to Hale to inform the media about his arrest, meaning they didn't have a duty to correct the information that was already out there.
Okay, but the Supreme Court took a different view on that, right?
Yeah.
They saw a potential duty where the trial court didn't.
Yeah, the Supreme Court pointed to a specific Montana law, section 28-1201 of the Montana Code annotated, which basically talks about the duty to avoid misrepresenting facts. They said that by putting out potentially inaccurate information about the warrant, and this is important, by allowing that information to continue being broadcast even after Hale was in custody, the police might have created a duty to prevent further harm to Hale. They messed up, basically, and then didn't do anything to fix it.
So it wasn't just about the initial broadcast of the information, but about the fact that the police didn't correct the record once Hale was arrested.
Right. They let those fugitive and armed and dangerous labels hang out there, even though they no longer applied. The Supreme Court said it's kind of like when a publisher needs to retract a false story. Once the police knew Hale was in custody, the information they'd given out became inaccurate, and they should have taken steps to stop those ongoing defamatory broadcasts. Their inaction, the court said, could be considered a breach of that duty of care.
Wow, that's a powerful analogy. It really highlights the potential responsibility that the police have in these situations. They can't just wash their hands of it once the information is out there, especially if it's wrong. Now, another really interesting aspect of this case was the defense's argument that calling Hale armed and dangerous was just like an opinion. They tried to argue that opinions are protected speech under the First Amendment, but the court didn't really buy that, did they?
Nope. Not at all. This gets into a really important distinction in defamation law. The difference between stating a pure opinion and stating a fact. Usually, pure opinions are protected under the First Amendment, as you mentioned. But in this case, the court applied a well-established legal rule. And that rule says that an opinion that implies there are undisclosed defamatory facts isn't automatically protected.
So, even if you say, in my opinion, you can't just say whatever you want without any repercussions, especially if it suggests you have some sort of insider knowledge or evidence that backs up your opinion.
Right. The key is whether that opinion hints at some underlying unstated factual basis. If those implied facts are false and damaging, it could still be defamatory. So, like in Hale's case, the court said that putting armed and dangerous on a most wanted show strongly implies there's a good reason to believe he's a threat, that there's some specific info the police have that led them to that conclusion. And since those underlying facts weren't actually revealed, or they might not have even existed or been accurate, the court said, nope, we're not going to treat that as just a protected opinion. It's not just about the words themselves. It's about what a viewer might reasonably infer from those words.
Yeah, it's like they're using those labels to paint a picture of him without actually providing any evidence to support it.
Precisely. It creates a negative impression in the public's mind without any real justification, and the court was sensitive to that.
This case really emphasizes the nuances of defamation law. You know, it shows how even something that sounds like an opinion can have real factual implications. Now, there was also something mentioned in the case called the public duty doctrine, What is that, and how did it factor into the court's decision?
Oh, yeah, the public duty doctrine. That's an interesting one. It's a legal principle that generally protects governmental entities like police departments from being held liable for negligence when they're carrying out duties that are owed to the public in general rather than to a specific individual. Think of it like this. A firefighter's duty is to the community as a whole, not to one specific house that might be on fire.
I see. So in this case, were the police arguing that they were only serving the public good by putting Hale on that most wanted list, even if the information was wrong?
It seems like that was part of their argument, yeah. But the Montana Supreme Court basically said that this doctrine doesn't automatically give the government a free pass, especially when their actions might have actually made things worse for a specific person. They said any special privileges for public entities aren't absolute and really depend on the specific facts of each situation and the actions taken by the government.
So they're acknowledging that sometimes the government's duty to the public and their duty to an individual might come into conflict.
Exactly. And the court was saying that you can't just ignore the potential harm to an individual just because you're acting in the name of the public good. There needs to be a balance. In Hale's case, their alleged failure to correct the misinformation after his arrest could be seen as an action that made the harm to him even worse.
Okay, so taking everything we've discussed into account, what are the biggest takeaways from Hale v. City of Billings Police Department? What makes this case so relevant, even today?
Well, for anyone dealing with defamation claims, this case really highlights the importance of the jury. It reinforces their role in deciding whether a statement is true or false. Unless the evidence is overwhelmingly clear one way or the other, it's usually up to the jury to make that call. This is a big deal for both public figures and everyday people who feel like they've been unfairly targeted by false statements.
So it's a reminder that in many cases, it's not up to the courts to decide what's true or false, but it's up to a group of everyday citizens to weigh the evidence and come to a conclusion.
Exactly. And that's a cornerstone of our legal system.
And for public entities like police departments, what does this case say about how they should handle information about individuals, especially when it's potentially damaging?
This case really underscores their responsibility when sharing information with the public, especially when it involves potentially harmful labels. They can't just throw information out there and then ignore the impact it has. They have a duty to make sure it's accurate and to take steps to correct it if it turns out to be wrong. And that's not just about legal technicalities. It's about making sure individuals aren't unfairly judged in the court of public opinion based on potentially false information.
It's like you said earlier, it's about balancing public safety with individual rights.
Exactly. Imagine having those labels, fugitive and armed and dangerous, attached to your name for 10 months while knowing the police knew where to find you all along. That's the human cost we're talking about here. It can have real-world consequences for people's lives.
Definitely. It's a reminder that we need to be cautious about how we label people, especially when those labels come from authority figures. Now, what about media outlets? What lessons can they take away from this case?
This case reminds media organizations that they can't just blindly rebroadcast information from law enforcement and expect to be shielded from liability. If they don't make a reasonable effort to verify that information, especially if it's potentially defamatory, they could face consequences.
So they have a responsibility to do their own due diligence, even when they're reporting on information provided by the police.
Exactly. They can't just assume the police are always right or that they have all the facts.
Okay, so for all the law students listening to this deep dive, what are the key principles from the Hale case that they should remember?
I'd say there are a few big takeaways here. First, always be skeptical of claims of privilege, especially from government entities. Remember, those privileges have limits, and they can be lost if they're abused or used recklessly. Second, when you're analyzing a potential defamation case, don't just look at the literal words. Think about what those words imply. Do they suggest there are hidden facts that support them? And finally, never assume that a case will be decided by summary judgment if there are disputed facts. Courts generally want to let juries decide those questions, especially when it comes to something as subjective as defamation.
This case really gets you thinking about the power that law enforcement and the media have to shape how the public sees someone. You know, it makes you wonder what kind of safeguards we should have in place to prevent inaccuracies and protect people from being unfairly labeled.
Right, because once that information is out there, it can be really hard to undo the damage, even if it's proven false later on.
Absolutely. It's a delicate balance between ensuring public safety and protecting individual rights, especially in today's world where information spreads so quickly online. This case leaves us with a lot to think about, that's for sure. It's a conversation that we need to keep having.
I agree. It's an ongoing challenge to find that right balance.
Well, on that note, I think we'll wrap up our deep dive for today. Thanks for joining us for this exploration of Hale v. City of Billings Police Department. It's a case that, although from 1999, still has a lot to teach us about the complexities of defamation, negligence, and the responsibilities of those in positions of power. And for all our listeners out there, keep thinking critically about the information you encounter, especially when it comes to labels and accusations. Always question the source, consider the context, and remember that there are always multiple sides to every story. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next time for another deep dive into the fascinating world of legal issues.
See you then.